start the show tonight with movie reviews. Three very different films this week. Mr. Jones, set in 1933, explores the attempts by the Soviet government to cover up a man-made famine in Ukraine and an English journalist's attempt to uncover the truth. Margot Robbie reprises the accent she perfected in Wolf of Wall Street, this time as the DC Comics heroine Harley Quinn. That's in the movie Birds of Prey. And finally, six nominations going into this Sunday's Oscar ceremony. Parasite from South Korea is director Bong Joon-ho's comment on inequality and surviving in a ruthless capitalist world. Sarah Taff-McGuire, Donald Clark have been to see all three for Arena. They're with me in studio now. Let's start with Mr. Jones. This is all around a real historical event, famine that took place in the Ukraine in and around 1933. But before we get to how the movie treats it, Donald, this is something that it's been contentious in Soviet, in Russian and in Soviet history for, and in Ukrainian history for a long time.
Well, I think the film gets a lot of this information and communicates a lot of it quite clearly, is the very fact of the famine itself was a mystery, was not known at the time contemporaneously. And even now, people fight furiously over to what extent it was man-made, to what extent it was a result of Stalin's policies, to what extent it was an act of genocide. That word genocide is controversial in itself. There was actually a film quite recently about it, a terrible film in 2017 called Bitter Harvest, which was financed by wealthy Ukrainian emigres who tried to make essentially a Dr. Zhivago out of it. And they kind of threw enormous amounts of money into it and tried to build a romance, fit a romance into the framework, the historical framework of the famine. And that worked very, very badly. I think this works a little bit better in taking a stuffy approach to laying out the facts. I mean, it does feel at times like Sunday night television in the way it's laid out and the way it's shot. But I think it efficiently gets the information across a way that I find satisfactory.
Right. It gives us the information rather than being a big cinematic experience. Agnieszka Holland is the director here, Sarah.
Indeed.
Quite a career, quite a kind of variety of styles behind her, including some really big stuff for television and for, you know, and mainstream television. But this is a different style of movie.
Well, and one that is personal to her. I mean, her work had been banned. In the 60s, her father was taken by the communist police and is reported to have died by suicide. But he was also a Jewish-Polish man who had fought in the Polish army in World War II. So this is something that is very close to home for her and very close to her heart. And in fact, the film does come with messages. It does, you know, have an agenda in seeking to publicize the fact that Walter Duranty, who was a bureau chief for the New York Times in Moscow, was being paid by the Soviets to write favourable accounts, so really stymied.
And you know, won Pulitzer Prize.
Yes, exactly. And the point is clearly made at the end of the film that one, the Holodomor, which is you know, called for, is the name for the famine which happened in Ukraine, that is really not as recognised as the director believes it should be, and that Walter Duranty still has Pulitzer Prize despite his very poor journalistic ethical standards.
All right, well, and journalism really is at the centre of this, so let's listen to a clip. The Mr. Jones of the title is a Welsh journalist, actually Gareth Jones, played by James Norton. And this is quite early on in the film where he has a friend, another friend, Paul Klebb, another journalist played by Marcin Sharodnik, if I'm saying his name correctly. They're having a phone call. Paul Klebb has just discovered something and he wants to pass the information on to Gareth Jones. And we should point out that Paul Klebb was instrumental in getting Gareth Jones an interview with Hitler. So that's an important detail as well.
Hello, гостиница Метрополь. Mr. Klebb?
Yeah?
Telephone, please.
Okay, sorry.
Спасибо. Алло?
Paul, this is Gareth Jones in London. Listen, I'm on my way to Moscow.
Gareth, I've been trying to reach you, so we're coming here.
Paul, I need your help
again, this time arranging an interview with Stalin. Please tell me you know a way.
Go see Walter Duranty at the New York Times. He has influence. I'm persona non grata at the moment. Listen, I really need to talk to you. I found something big. It can break the story wide open. It's worse than we thought before.
Paul? Paul?
And we know from the visuals there that clearly the phone line has been cut between the journalist Paul Klebb, played by Marcin Sharnik, and James Norton there playing the character of Gareth Jones. How gauche is Gareth Jones, or is he not gauche at all? I said as that clip was playing, Donald, He wasn't without ambition, was he?
No, he wasn't.
I've done Hitler, now can I interview Stalin?
I was thinking, listen to that. I don't suppose the notion of interviewing Stalin had quite the weight it has retrospectively, given what we know about Stalin. I was probably closer to interviewing Leo at that stage when he was still a relatively new tyrant. Not that he was a tyrant. Yeah. A tyrant on the block. It's a funny structure, this film. It's interesting, you know, it was a full 20 minutes longer when it screened Berlin a year ago. And a lot of the reviews, I haven't seen that version, but a lot of the reviews suggested it was incredibly baggy and needed to be chopped down. It's still pretty long. Mm. And the fact that you can't really tell that it's chopped down suggests it probably was a good idea to chop it down. If you lose that much and it still feels like a film of respectable length. But one thing they have left in, which I thought was really clunky, was they have this sort of framing device with George Orwell writing Animal Farm, and it's almost like an origin story for Animal Farm in that sense, because you have Orwell as the still loyal communist in the 1930s, and he's introduced to the story, and clearly this turns his head, and then some years later he writes this famous allegory for the decline of the Soviet experiment. That felt very clunky to me, and I think you could have got rid of it altogether, and we'd have lost those further 10 minutes. It would have felt like a more economical film.
The entire centre of the film, if you like, the middle act, is really just Jones himself, what's his name, the actor,
James Norton
himself, walking through snow-covered Ukraine with very, very little dialogue.
Yeah, that was a totally different film, to be honest. And it was remarkably stark. He just arrives.
Terrible images of famine.
Yeah, really, really horrific kind of stuff. He's just wading through the wilderness. He is, in fact, has no food left anymore. Yeah. He encounters children singing a harrowing song about their loyalty towards Stalin, yet the hunger and cold that they feel deeply. We see dead bodies piled up on roads, and even a shocking moment where some children are found to be eating their
cannibalism
brother.
Is involved.
Yeah, exactly.
No, but they don't. I think they're right in I agree with everything you said, but I think they realise you can't really make that look as it would look. I mean, the children do look a little bit like refugees from Les Miserables. Yeah. I mean, they're a little bit too healthy. But I think that's okay. I'm not saying that as criticism. I'm just pointing out, because I think it's almost offensive to try and pretend that you can create.
And I think we famine look, if you like. And given that we know Agnieszka Holland's background, is she even handed? I mean, there's a character, Ada Brooks, played by their name gone out. Vanessa Kirby, yes, who kind of gives a bit of balance in that she initially, at any rate, was kind of fighting the Soviet side, saying, "Look at this Russian idea isn't so bad."
Yeah, and what is redeemed about this film and makes it seem slightly more nuanced is the fact that Ada will say, "You know, well, listen, that Stalin is trying to do something. He has an aim of an egalitarian society. Don't be so hasty with your rushing." And then George Orwell, the character himself, does say, "Well, listen, Stalin has an end goal. Perhaps the ends will justify the means." So
isn't that all a bit kind of on the nose, that dialogue? They're representing.
So when it is a little bit heavy-handed and inappropriate, given what we just heard about the terrible famine, there is an attempt here at some kind of
even-handed stars. And did it work overall for you, Sarah, and stars?
Oh, I totally agree. The thing about George Orwell, totally unnecessary for what is a very important story to be told. So I'm saying 3 out of 5 stars.
And what are you saying, Donald?
3 out of 5. Yeah, I think it communicates the information well, but a lot of it is very clunky. But we haven't mentioned Peter Sarsgaard is over the top as Walter Duranty. He's like something out of a McCarthyite propaganda film. But yes, I would say it's a solid 3 out of 5.
Okay, let's move on to Birds of Prey, directed by Kathy. Yeah, isn't it? Kathy, name gone away from me.
Yeah.
And Margot Robbie producing and acting in this, and a very forefronted female cast.
Yeah.
What story has been told? It's a DC Comics character.
Yeah, it is.
It's always the hardest question, isn't it? What story has been told?
Well, essentially, ostensibly, it's a story of Harley Quinn herself. I mean, the full title is Birds of Prey and the Fantabulous Emancipation of One Harley Quinn. So we're introduced to Harley Quinn. There's a short series of animation where we meet her. Mm. She was a psychiatrist. She fell in love with her patient, fell in a bucket of nuclear waste.
Her patient being an important
Her patient, character. Mr. Joker, absolutely. And they've just ended a relationship. So this is the point where she's living life on her own. Living life on her own means she is no longer has the protection of the Joker and is susceptible to all sorts of bad guys who she's slighted over the years, coming back and looking for their piece of Harley Quinn.
And so we've just had a Joker, of course, and Joaquin Phoenix winning the BAFTA the other night for his performance within Joker and making quite a big statement when he got up onto the stage. Is there any relationship between these two films?
And they're very clear about that. The Joker, the film, is in a parallel universe. So it is not in the universe of the DC. This is the DC extended universe. Stay awake, everybody.
And there's a Marvel Marvel one
which
out
is
there
exactly
as well.
Which is the same universe which takes in Aquaman and took in Batman vs Superman. Yeah. Joker is in a parallel universe and he will not appear in any other DC extended universe films. Because they've ditched the other Joker because no one liked him and turned to Margot Robbie because she was the character liked in Suicide Squad, which gets to my feelings about the DC Extended Universe is, you know, I think the film is terrible. I mean, it's just a complete chaotic mess and stylistically and aesthetically all over the place. But I kind of admire DC's utter shamelessness in that with Marvel you have this sort of smooth ticking, rather boring machine which churns out three films every year and they all fit very neatly together and there's a huge arc that they've been planning for years and decades. In DC's case, they kind of think, like, what's worked recently? That's worked, we'll fling that at the wall. That's worked, we'll fling that at the wall. So Deadpool worked for Marvel. We'll do that, but we'll do it with the character Harley Quinn from Suicide Squad. Because people liked her, and we'll, like, sling her with bits of, like, you know,
so
people dressed up with the Spice Girls.
It's a story made by committee, is it?
It is, yeah, it really is. I mean, and it's, you know, I think it's utterly shameless in that regard. And it's, you know, they've produced a film much in my... I mean, I thought Deadpool was appalling, that it made enormous amounts of money and got quite good reviews. But they've got the same thing in that it's just daring enough to kind of, like, you know, frighten the censor so he'll give you a 16 cert. But ultimately, no more grown-up than a Pixar film. I mean, less grown up than any Pixar film in the last decade, and I include the dinosaur in that. Right. I mean, it's ultimately incredibly childish.
Okay, well, let's have a listen to a clip. I don't think I need to know much more than Ewan McGregor is the baddie and he wants the diamond back, and that Margot Robbie is the goodie and she has the diamond, I guess.
I want to kill you because without the Joker around, I can't. For all your noise and bluster, you're just a silly little girl with no one around to protect her.
Whoa, wait!
What?
Don't kill me.
Ah, right.
No, seriously. Romy. Come on, there's gonna be something we can figure out. Hey! Where were you? You lost something, right? You lost something, I heard you say it. A diamond. I can help you find it. Seriously. I know the East End better than anybody. You want this diamond back? I'm your gal.
Margot Robbie and Ewan McGregor there in a clip from Birds of Prey. She ends with the line, I'm your gal. What type of gal is she giving us here? And her supporting cast all around her. Ella J. Basco, Rosie Perez is in there as well, and Mary Elizabeth Winstead. It is very much a forefronted set of female heroines here.
Female written as well, it's interesting to point out. But yeah, absolutely. And this is a film which is playing towards what I feel a younger and more woke audience, you wish to call it. And it does appeal to them in a number of ways, and it added some sort of levity in that fact. So we have one moment, Harley Quinn being told, you know, and someone comes to get her, and she's told they don't like her because she voted for Bernie and has a vagina. There's a moment at which the pickpocket Cassandra Cain, the young girl who has the diamond and is the reason that they are all fleeing Roman Sionis, the Blask Mask, the Ewan McGregor evil character, and they say, oh, yeah, she says, oh, I'm also here to pickpocket white rich men. So there is a sort of a little bit of a twinkle in its eye and in its attempt to be new and relevant and interesting to a younger audience. I find that kind of
and cool. And the storyline that they're giving us, does it go anywhere beyond Ewan McGregor's the bad guy and these are all good
people
trying to get the diamond?
It does attempt to tell the story of several disparate women who are all living different very lives but in other ways have been stiffed by men in their life and are trying to, you know, enact revenge or to take control of their life and to claim successes and victories and forge independent lives of their own.
Any men here that are worth their salt, or are they all baddies like Ewan McGregor?
Good question. I think they all are in retrospect. What's McGregor doing? It's so strange that, I mean, he appears to be doing a slightly offensive camp gay man at the start, and then you sort of think, well, I don't like that. And then he stops doing it. Well, at least if you're going to do your offensive camp gay man, keep doing it. And then halfway through, he changes from Dick Emery into something else. I mean, you talk about the story, kind of, is there a story? Well, there probably is a story, but it doesn't happen until the last 20 minutes. This film keeps starting and then stopping and restarting. Every time, every sort of 5 or 10 minutes, you'll see a character, a new character, and a logo will appear on the screen explaining who that character is. Then it'll happen again. Then it'll happen again. Start the damn film.
It sounds like it's a setup for a whole set of sequences.
In terms of the representation of the female character, I'm delighted that this is a film full of women and directed by women. It's, you know, better than many of the films stuffed with men, and these films make money. We've seen Captain Marvel, so they know that. But the representation is really peculiar, particularly in the fight sequences. I don't get this thing why female superheroes have to do gymnastics. You don't see Batman doing cartwheels.
Did you? I mean, sorry, make it clear that Donald didn't enjoy it. You sound as if you got a little bit more out of it. And do you agree with him on that comment about the action in the movies? Because it is an action movie, after all.
Yeah, it is an action movie, but I don't know. They've done so many of these films. Why not have something a little bit different? My main gripe with the film is not that women have to, you know, cartwheel, you know, as their forms.
What is your main gripe?
My main gripe is just the fact that there were so many different characters, huge numbers of them underdeveloped. Perhaps interesting characters like the Huntress, who we saw played by Mary Elizabeth Winstead. Really interesting backstory, possibly of that her family were killed and she's enacting revenge. She went to Sicily to become an assassin and is again introduced at the end. So while we have maybe interesting characters and interesting ideas about women, you know, reclaiming their own lives, that is lost to the pace.
Is there a cynical, then, to touch on what Donald was saying, is there a cynical setting up of a whole bundle of sequels here and a whole bundle of characters whose lives
100%, but yeah. I mean, really, that's the genre. And so my problem with this film is less so about the film and more so about the whole genre.
Right.
I mean, these are always light on plot, very fast pace, and, you know, sacrificing humour and what have you. So yeah, it's called Birds of Prey, and the next film, I don't know what they're going to call it, but it's some form of Birds of Prey. You know, we do have the three Birds of Prey set up at the end of this film, and that really seems to be what the film is seeking.
Stars from you on this one first, Donald?
Well, everyone seems to love it. I know the reviews have been great, but I mean, I'm giving it generous too.
Yeah, so you weren't happy.
No.
And you, sir, a little happier?
Yeah, a little bit happier. 3 out of 5 for me.
3 out of 5 from you. Let's move on then to our final film of the night, Parasite, Korean film from director Bong Joon-ho. One of the most highly anticipated films of the year, this, and nominated and for several Oscars. Is it 6 in total?
6 indeed, and in fact, the first Korean film of all time to be nominated for any Oscar.
So if it wins, it will be the first Korean film to win an
Oscar. Certainly historic, yes.
Yeah, okay, so Parasite, we're talking about a family of parasites here, really, aren't we?
Well, it is.
Families of parasites.
Yeah, we're all parasites now. The film doesn't make any judgment necessarily on who is the parasite. If it did, it would be a slightly less good film. We have two families here. We have the Kim family. They're living in a basement in Seoul. They're unemployed. The two adult children live with their parents. Then we have the Park family in the wealthy suburb of Seoul. The sort of neurotic mother character and the somewhat spoilt children. The absent father who comes and everyone sort of bows down below him. So what happens is we have the son of the Kim family. He is Ki Woo, played by Woo Sik Choi. He is approached by his friend Min, who is Sojeon Park. Again, please excuse my pronunciation. Not Korean is not what it should be. But so we have them, and Min approaches him, offering him a teaching job in this wealthy family home. So his sister forges all the documents. They arrive, and thanks to Ki-woo's fantastic acting performance, he secures jobs for his entire family.
Okay.
Yeah, they all have to pretend they don't know each other and are versed in their different fields. That is, as a driver, as the domestic, the living housekeep, essentially, driver, and then art teacher, and indeed art therapist to the spoiled Park Sun.
They've managed to land themselves.
They have deeply embedded themselves in people's lives.
On the surface of it, they're the parasites. But then we meet the wealthy family and we see something else there, Donald.
Well, yes. I mean, we're clearly supposed to ask ourselves whether the wealthy family who are, you know, living the lap of luxury and are so, if they are the parasites, and not least because they are so disconnected from reality as a society. I mean, I think the film is really interesting in terms of its attitude towards what you might call the villains, that is to say, like the boss class. The boss class, it doesn't hate them. It doesn't regard them as evil. The notion seems to be they've been so insulated from the realities of what we now call neoliberalism that certainly the wife in particular doesn't know to ask the questions any sensible person would ask of these people who are coming into her house. She's in that sense a victim of the structure as much as anybody else. And those things are vital to the appeal of the film. But I think he's a fascinating director, Bong Joon-ho in that over his career, you can't pin him down. He made Memories of Murder, I think, was the film that really announced him to the rest of the world outside Korea, which was this long-running kind of Zodiac-like yes. Detective story. The Host, which was a giant monster movie, but nonetheless had a social aspect to it as well. And now this, which everyone was writing about and talking about quite correctly, that it is a social satire. But what really makes it function is that it's also an incredibly breakneck farce. It is where it plays itself out through the language of breakneck farce. Mm. I saw this at Cannes, and it was extraordinary reaction in that there's a, which obviously I won't spoil, but there's a plot point, and there's a plot point. It's not kind of a big moment, but it's part of the film where they're assembling their story, basically. Yeah. They're setting it all up, and there's one little plot point, and then people broke into applause at
for
one
a
of
plot
at,
point.
At, exactly. Right. One of the, there's a, oh, yeah. Beautifully neat plot, but they never do that at Cannes. They're, you know, they're jerks. They're far more happier booing stuff. And that, I think, demonstrated, when I was watching, there's something really clicking here with audiences.
And I think you've kind of looked at a four-part structure in this respect.
It's
not that it changes genre, but it really has four acts and brings you along very entertainingly.
Almost, perhaps in sort of offbeat comedy, this family who can't catch a break, and look, their house is being, you know, this pest going inside it. Then they, oh, look, we'll get our sister and then the mum and then the dad in. And
so
then
it's kind of a comedy at that point.
Yeah, and you're like, well, where is this really going? And then we get into thriller, a deeply suspense-filled thriller. I'm not going to ruin about anything here. And then we get into horror, like sort of gory, but art house, beautiful stills of the interior of the home, palatial looking, and then the suburbs of the dense suburbs of Seoul. And then it gets into a very reflective moment where it's a dark, pensive drama and gets deeper into the subtext of our adoration of the rich people and idealising them and in a way sort of spying on them and looking to become them.
All right. I mean, I was looking at a trailer for this today, and I think the word masterpiece stays on the screen for about 5 minutes with several different publication names coming up underneath a masterpiece. Is it a masterpiece? And will it do well at the Oscars on Sunday?
I would use that word as rarely as possible. But yes, it'll do for this as well as any other film. Well, it will do, I don't know. Put it this way. I think it's done an extraordinary job in getting itself into a place where it's now the second favourite for Best Picture. When I saw it, kind of thought, yeah, okay, could get a Best Picture nomination, but that very rarely tends to happen. As Sarah was saying, the first Korean film to be nominated for a foreign language picture, never mind Best Picture.
Yes.
And after having won it, the Screen Actors Guild and other places won the Ensemble Award, Screen Actors Guild. It now looks like it probably is in second place, but 1917 is going to win. I mean, ultimately they're going to back away at the last moment, and they're going to say, "Hey, it's winning International Picture. It doesn't need to win Best Picture. It may win one or two. It might win Art Design. It might win Screenplay. But even then, that's dodgy. Yeah. I wouldn't bet on it winning any more than none. More than one. Sorry.
Right. Well, how many stars will it win from you, though?
I'm giving you the full five.
You're giving it the full five.
Full five.
Right, okay. So not quite a masterpiece, but worth five, okay.
And I'm going to give it a 4 out of 5. I think sort of the social commentary is definitely there, but I contend slightly overestimated but by some of the critics, but a great thriller, horror film, comedy.
All right, so four from you. Mm-hmm. So the four, the three films we were speaking about there, Mr. Jones, Birds of Prey and Parasite, Sarah Taffin-Guire and Donald Clark speaking to us about them.